תפילות. So we'll give it a few more minutes to see if some more people arrive. We're expecting some more people in the room.
Hello? Edmund has joined.
Hi, Edmund.
Hi. I'm going to have to drop off in, like, about 40 minutes.
Okay.
Anyway.
But can you put your phone on mute? Because there's a lot of...
Yes, I will do that. Sorry about it.
So we have, in the room here, we've got Patrick Falstrom, Dr. Govind, Bart, myself, and Teresa. We were expecting to have a few more people, Avery and Heather Dryden. So we'll hang around a little while longer and see if they turn up.
There's one of them.
Go around the room first, and then have people who are on the line tell us who's on the who they are. Wait for that. So let's start.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing
okay. Okay. Sorry. We're just doing a roll call. So.
Oh, nice show. It's Teresa with ICANN.
And I'm here.
I'd like to just mention that my name is Ravi Shankar.
Yes, Ravi.
I represent the Government of India as a member on the Government Advisory Committee.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ravi.
And I've come here to attend the FAG meeting. Again, I'm a member on the FAG as the Government of India in the context of the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dr. Govind?
Dr. Govind, GAC Secretariat in India, representing on the RTO issues.
Dr. Sastram, Cisco, being part of the technical appointee to this committee, I think.
Dr. Sama, from the Development Organization.
Dr. Pandey, from the RTO.
political item. And Christa Spain, CCNSO. So, who do we have on the line?
This is Ming Chen from TWNIC.
Hi, Ming Chen.
Hi.
Suzanne Chen, United States.
Suzanne.
Okay.
Tina Diem, ICAM.
Carrie Carp.
Cheryl, IAC.
Cheryl and Carrie, got you both, thank you.
This is Denise Michelle, ICAM.
Denise.
I'm Emily from CCNSO for you.
Thanks, Yama.
Kirk Brooks, I can.
Anyone else that we haven't got?
I can.
Sorry, Donna. Yes, hi, Donna.
Yeah.
Edmund, we've got Edmund. Edmund, don't worry, we've got you. That's it. Okay. Bart and I spent a few hours chatting this morning, and we think that what might be useful is to, if it's okay with everybody, is to refer back to the current version of the proposed methodology, which is proposed methodology version 8, and actually tick off a few things that we know that we think we're okay with and that we think we've reached consensus on, and then move on to some issues that we know that we haven't reached consensus on, but we just think we need to go back a few steps and check that basically in agreement on a series of issues. So if that's okay, the document, as I said, is proposed methodology version 8. And we'll start with the beginning principles, which start at A and run to G on the first and second page of the document. Most of these we've discussed, and most of these, as far as I can tell, are fairly okay with everybody, with a couple of exceptions in that there have been some comments. I don't think that there's any... I think there's general consensus on an ongoing process, on it being an ongoing process, rather than, only open 3 months, etc. My recollection is that there may have been a couple of comments from people who were suggesting that it should be a series of windows, but that's a slightly deeper level. The fundamental principle of it being an ongoing process, I think, is agreed. If anybody has any challenge to that, then please speak up. The second one is that it mustn't preempt the overall policy. Again, we don't really have anywhere to go on that one because that's actually the resolution. That's part of the resolution from the board setting up the working group. The third one is that the purpose of the fast track is to meet pressing demand. And Avery's just joined us, everybody. Third one is that the purpose of the fast track is to meet pressing demand. Now, this has we have received at least one comment talking against this particular principle. But again, the impression that I get is that there's general consensus in the group. Who just joined?
Yanis Kerkwins.
Hello, Yanis.
Hi.
There seems to be general consensus that the fast track is there to meet pressing demand. And there also seems to be general consensus that our principle that as one of the criteria, in order to be in the fast track, you have to be ready. Also, which sort of hangs off the back of that, seems to also have met with general acceptance. Again, with one or two exceptions, where people have put a comment in to say that they don't think that they have to be ready, they should be able to get CCTLD and then be ready later on. The fast track being only for non-Latin scripts is probably the one that has received the most pushback, but even that hasn't been a vast amount of pushback, but there has been some suggesting that you shouldn't be able to only nominate script. I don't know if there's anybody on the call who believes that principle is wrong, but if there is, then they can speak to that if they'd like to. Okay. E is the non-contentiousness, which again I don't think has caused anybody any problems. The whole purpose of the fast track is to be able to deal with things quickly, and almost by definition, if at the moment there's any contention, it becomes quite difficult to see how it can go through the fast track. F is fast track is experimental in nature. This is more of a statement to say that we all acknowledge that this has never been done before, and that therefore we need to take that into consideration when making decisions. And finally, G is that rather than having an arbitrary number of available slots under the fast track, we should allow the criteria themselves to determine the number of IDNs, CCTLDs that end up being issued under the fast track. So, does anybody have anything they want to discuss on any of those particular points?
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Edmund. Sorry, I'm not in front of a computer right now, but the version that you mentioned, I guess the main item that, in terms of the principles, was the one about non-controversial within the territory. I just want to make sure I didn't miss that, because that's one of the areas that I think we need some further discussion on.
Okay, it's letter E, and it says the proposed string and delegation request should be non-contentious within the territory. Two mechanisms should only allow for the delegation of a non-contentious string for an IDN CCTLD and the designation of a non-contentious IDN CCTLD manager. So, go ahead if you want to talk about that. Now is fine.
So the version right now does have the within the territory, or it does not?
Yes, it does.
It does. Well, I guess that's definitely one of the areas that I feel, we probably need more discussion, because that creeps the scope of the work group outside of the charter. Well, at least in my view, and probably in a few others' view, that it creeps outside of the original charter, which talks about non-contentious, pretty much period, overall. So I think that's probably one of the areas, in terms of the principles, where there would be more contentious discussion.
A contentious discussion about non-contentiousness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've raised this particular issue on a number of occasions, and it ties back to your point about some sort of objection procedure.
I guess they are somewhat interrelated. It also ties into the later document that you sent recently about leaving it all up to the board, and how we ultimately deal with these type of situations.
So, okay. Does anybody want to address the point that Edmund's raised in respect to the problem of only being concerned about contention within the territory, rather than allowing some sort of objection procedure from outside the territory? Anybody want to
just before that, just adding to it, I'd really, if we're talking about the principle itself, I think we should decouple the two issues, because they are somewhat related, but in a sense of a principle, I think we can talk about whether as a fast track, not as a long track, or the PDP, as a fast track, should it be non-contentious as it is scoped out in the charter, or should we recharter or redefine what the charter said and put it within non-contentious within a territory?
Yeah, I understand that, and I've got some comments, but I want to see if anybody else has anything to say first. Okay. I'll give it a go and see where we get to. Part of the issue is that under two specific documents, the GAC principles and the WSIS principles, are they principles or whatever they call the WSIS, again, whatever it is anyway, the things from WSIS, there is a clear statement in both of those documents that the CCTLD is sovereign within the territory and there should be no outside interference in respect to that from anywhere else. So my understanding, it's basically taken as a principle that you couldn't have a circumstance where a territory is electing to ask for the delegation of an IDN CCTLD, given the criteria put in place to ensure that that IDN CCTLD actually fits as being meaningful for the territory, where a controversy could actually be created simply because, and I'm just using this as an example, simply because, notwithstanding the fact that it meets all of the criteria of being an official language and being meaningful, someone else could object. And I think, Edmund, that's the most difficult hurdle for you to overcome in this discussion. It's certainly my understanding, and I'm only delivering an understanding here, and if I'm wrong, no doubt people will tell me, is that certainly from a government point of view, and in the case of most CCTLDs, they would view the fact that it's non-controversial in their territory as being more than sufficient to ensure that it should be delegated, with the proviso that the actual string itself fits within the criteria set out for the fast track. But Avery has something to say.
Well, I think that's what you bring up. I think the WSIS is that no one should interfere with the running of a CCT. No other nation should interfere with the running. And I don't think anyone is questioning what happens post the delegation, post the name. I think what people are bringing up is that before the delegation, there may be a number of other issues, and we've talked around these several other times, of issues that one might have with variance on names, with choices of names, with that are not necessarily the same as running a CCTLD within a country. And so that's where... I take that
distinction. I mean, I accept that. I think you're right. And basically, it's never had to say anything about it before because it's never been a circumstance where it's had to be dealt with before. But I think what you're asking seems to me, and let's be clear here, because we're on a very tight time frame if we're going to try and get this done at all. So we need to start hitting nails on heads. What we're talking about here is actually the GTLD world asking for there to be an opportunity to object to an IDN CCTLD. And unless I've missed something, I don't think that the possibility of an objection process has been raised or spoken in favour of by anyone other than the GTLD side of the argument.
Okay. I would have trouble saying that no one outside of the bulk of it. I do think that there is another issue, and it's the one that I brought up in my notes, which I didn't think it was actually going to be on one of the topics of discussion for this meeting. I'd like to point that off to the future. Is that there will be objections, and that there are always objections, there are always issues raised by someone. And it's not just GNSO community saying we ought to be able to. What I think I've asked for is a recognition that there will be issues brought up and that those need a way of being dealt with other than your board, here's your issues. And so that's second issue.
May I intervene here?
Yes, you may, Yannis.
So thank you, and hello, everybody. I simply wanted to understand what is the, on example, why this is a concern of GNSO. Whether are there any specific cases you're really afraid of? So this is the one question. Another question, another thing is I wanted to confirm, Chris, that your reading of Vicious Principles is correct, and they in the GAC view they are binding also to IDMC CTLDs. So in general, and then there might be some particular cases that we'll be looking at once we will meet on the call 20 May and in Paris. So these are two points. And the third point, I think that nothing can prevent GNSO Council of raising any issue with the board for the fast track. So that maybe that's kind of way we may think on to formulate issue, not to say something about a formal objection procedure, but we can formulate that since this will be information will be publicly available, then any supporting organization advisory committee can raise the issue with the board if they feel that their rights or their interests may be jeopardized by that, and then it's ultimately up to the board to work out this potential conflict with applicants.
Thank you, Yannis. Avery or Edmund, do you want to address Yannis's question about what is the concern, or do you have an example? Sure.
This is Edmund.
Go ahead, Edmund.
Oh, okay. I guess in terms of Yannis's first question, I'm not really speaking on behalf of the GNSO or anything, but just really as a member of the working group looking at the charter, the charter does specify specifically a limited number of non-contentious IDMC CTLDs as the scope of the working group, and we're further, we're actually alternate. Adjusting its scope a little bit by saying that it's non-contentious within the territory, and that's the point I'm raising. And there is actually in the charter, I actually found this off the computer right now, that's why I'm speaking to it. In the charter, it also talks about if issues become apparent to the IDMC working group that are outside of this scope, then the IDM working group chair should inform the CCPDP issues manager of the issue and taken into account in the CCPDP, and that's, I think that's really the crux of the discussion here is, since we've identified an issue which may be out of scope, perhaps this is an issue that should be taken into account in the CCPDP, and that's the issue I'm raising, not really the sovereignty issue or anything against the GAC principles, but specifically on the IDMC work with them, what we're supposed to deliver, and especially what Chris was saying, we are on a tight schedule, and we want to deliver something that's meaningful within the scope that we're working with.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll get back to that in a second. Charles wanted to say something.
Yes, I wanted to say something in general. I don't have any specific case as a reply to Janice, but I think it could be, for example, for intellectual property people, maybe this could be one of the cases. One of the IENCCLDs might be similar to a trademark in other language. Will this give the IP people some chance to tell the CCTLD please try to choose something different or something very similar to this trademark?
So, two things, I think. Edmund, I'm not sure how you can... I'm not sure how you can move something like this out of the fast track, because if I understand you correctly, what I think you're saying is that the charter does not make a reference to being non-controversial in territory. It just makes a reference to non-controversial or something else. Similar words to that, which is correct. But I don't see how it's going to be possible to... The only way that you can deal with this there are only two answers. One is there's no objection procedure, and the other is there is. If there's an objection procedure, then it's flipped into another two alternatives. You could say that the working group says there should be an objection procedure, and then someone else can go away and figure out how that works. That's the start of that. Or alternatively, the working group says that there should be an objection procedure, and this is how we think it should be.
As I mentioned, I really think we should decouple these two discussions. We can bring this up later, but right now we're talking about a principle as an output from the IDNC, and that's really what I'm talking about. As a principle, we shouldn't change the charter. And really, the only suggestion I have is to drop the within the territory, and we're all good.
And then what would that mean, though?
It means that we're still within the scope, and then that the IDN CCDLD should be non-contentious.
Yeah, and then what would that mean? How would that actually mean?
It's no different than adding within the territory. What would that mean? It would mean the same thing.
Second
would be without the within the territory.
The practical effect of it, if you take it out, then the practical effect
right.
of it.
You have to determine whether something is contentious or not.
That's correct.
Now we're doing it within a restricted subset.
Correct.
And we're saying that the charter was not restricted subset. The charter was contentious. And I believe that was the statement, that it wasn't contentious.
For argument's sake, what it says in the charter, the purpose of the IDNC working group is to develop and report on feasible methods, if any, that would enable the introduction of in a timely manner, in a manner that ensures the continued security and stability of the internet, of a limited number of non-contentious IDNC CCLDs, while the overall policy is being developed.
Yeah. So I understand. So I'm clear on exactly what you're saying, Avery, and what you said, Edmund. And the point is, if I understand it correctly, your point is this. You're saying it does not naturally follow from removing the phrase in territory. It does not naturally follow that there would then necessarily be an objection procedure. That's a separate discussion. Is that basically correct?
For me, it is. That's a separate discussion. In terms of the objection mechanism and whatever we do there, it's a completely separate discussion. What we're talking about is the principle of the work.
It's really hard to hear you. Now I can't hear you at all.
Sorry. Is this better?
Yeah, I understand. We could hear you, but it was really hard to hear you.
Okay. Is this a little bit better?
Yeah, it's a lot better.
Okay. All right. Thanks. I guess the issue is really that I think it's completely two items. Whether the objection mechanism or not, and how that is still dealt with is completely separate. We're talking right now about the principle, as an output of the principles from the IDNC work group, and I think that should fall within the scope. when we talk about the objection mechanism, that's a completely different discussion, and you know we can address it then. And there could be many different ways to address that. But you know, this, yeah.
Okay. What I'm going to suggest we do is that we take Principle E. We send two versions of Principle E to the list. One being the version that is currently in the document, and the other being a version which has the words within the territory taken out, and we ask the list for their opinions on that, on the purely on that as a principle. Okay.
Is this so you're just putting it to the list and asking for comments on two versions? Let's see.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just said. We'll send two versions statement of Principle E to the list. One currently is, one with it taken out, and see what people say. Fair enough? Excellent. What? Okay, so that one. Grabby.
Thank you. I have a single point to mention.
Yeah, but in respect to these particular things?
I wanted to mention in the appropriate context of these 3 points.
Which 3 points?
Proposed screen, the fast track, and the criteria.
Yeah, well, we haven't got there yet. So you're welcome to say it, but it's going to be out of context. So we need to.
I have tried to put it all into a synoptic situation.
Right.
Do you want to say it now? Yes, I do.
Okay, you go ahead and say it now. That's fine.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. A string for any language is a finite element. I'm just trying to say that script and a string could be variant, which is what I want to emphasize, that in Indian languages, a script is used for many languages, and hence, when you depict the name of the country, example, India in Hindi or India in Sanskrit, the string will vary, though the script is the same. So this is the point I am trying to emphasize. And since this is a technical issue on a language, the script, and the length of the string varying, despite the script being the same, but the language is different. So we should leave it to the language expert. Language is an area wherein we feel that ICANN should rely on the expert for assistance. Experts should preferably be drawn from a public authority or an accredited authority of the territory to which the language belongs. And if a language cuts across territorial borders, it should be from an expert group of all stakeholders across this territory. Because I do understand that there are a few languages which cut across territories. It could be Bengali, it could be Urdu, it could be Tamil. So we have to take in all the respective states. The second aspect is the fast track should be deployed at the next session of ICANN. And 2008 is the year of languages. And we are meeting in Paris, and UNESCO is based in Paris. I can see a smile on Bernard's face. I think Paris should say it all, and we should put the fast track mechanism at Paris. Official languages, as defined by the public authority of territory, should be the process to be adopted by ICANN. So I think that is the point I'm just. And inclusive growth should be the lead motive of the fast track, not restricting the numbers.
There we go. Yeah.
The strength for the official languages are in position and there's the readiness. We should accept that as the general principle for going ahead. I thought I would mention these things.
Thank you.
Totality of point.
Thank you, Ray. Can I just say one thing? Most of what you said, we're going to get to it. We may not get to it today, but we're going to get to it. Most of what you said is actually pretty much one way or another kind of already in here, with one exception, which is that the fast track should be deployed from Paris. can I say to you that I think that's an excellent, excellent idea, something that we have all been working extremely hard to achieve, and can I suggest that I'm prepared to commit to go back to the CCNSO and push really hard to get the CCNSO to agree in Paris, and might I ask you to do the same with the GAC along with your other GAC colleagues who are on this call, because that, those are the two, ultimately those are the requirements for us to actually proceed. So the GAC has to agree. The GNSO as well obviously has to be, you know, has to have had its say, and if we do anything outrageous, I've no doubt. I've no doubt that in Paris Avery and colleagues will say something. But we need to make sure that both the GAC and the CGNSO drive this forward, otherwise it's not going to happen in Paris. Anybody else want to comment on anything that Ravi said?
Is it possible for me to comment? I'm sorry, gentlemen.
Yes, who is that?
Yeah, this is the first time I join your group. My name is Iba Weishek. I'm from Syria, and I am the head of the Arabic team for Arabic domain names, which is an official name by the League of Arabic States.
Yep.
It's an official team. I wish I could make a small comment regarding the committee, the language committee.
Yes.
And the need for this committee. Is it possible we have some painful experience with diverging opinions regarding this particular issue, because the Arabic language, as our colleague from India mentioned, is one language which spans several territories. And as you may know, there are several countries whose the official language is Arabic. There is a team who has been officially appointed by the public authorities of these countries, who has met and has determined in a way or another a list of strings which could be applied immediately in the frame of the fast track implementation. I don't know if similar work in other countries who are interested by IDN exists, but at least in our case this is the case. We are working on updating the standards which are the equivalent of the ISO standards of the Arabic states, but it's not yet completed. But even though with such a work, which is currently published as an internet draft and which has been officially approved by the highest authority, transnational, which is the Commission of Arab Ministers for Communications, be accepted as a reference or as a base for the strings which would nominate, which will be used as for IDN CCTLDs?
Is that a question?
Yes. Would that be eventually accepted as a reference and be, and would allow us eventually to not to have reference to a linguistic group or to a group expert, because the debate has already been done in a way or another during the last 2 years?
I understand. And I don't know.
We simply don't want to restart everything from scratch, because from my own experience, this debate could be endless.
I understand completely. I don't know the answer to your question, but I do know that. Charles, would you want to say something?
I have to answer, but I can say maybe Dr. Abad, we haven't met Charles Chaban from Abu Ghazali. Aina Shabini, for example, is with you, and he's with ESCO, and he's with what we call the Multilingual Internet Initiative.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's not an initiative. Okay, let me formulate it very clearly. It's an official team nominated by the public authorities of all these countries.
Wanted to say that maybe we can through our initiative to for example, take the other. If there is any comment about these, and we can, of course, review, because you choose, of course, what the CCTLD is. It's the different territories. Each country will have to choose its CCTLD in the Arabic language. And as you said, there's already very good work already done, and you have some very good names you chose, I think. So we can maybe just send to...
I'm sorry, but I wonder who could object on this, you see? It would be strange for me if someone comes from outside and says, well, the name of Egypt, for example, shouldn't be Masr. Can Carrie speak, please?
Carrie, just 1 second. I've got you on the list.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I have now. Can I ask that I understand what you're saying, and I understand that you've explained a whole heap of things, some of which go to particular points that we're going to be talking about, some of which are general. If you were prepared to send a note to the list outlining outlining what it is you're actually talking about specifically in respect to the organisation you're talking about, the work that it's doing, and what you expect it would mean.
Exactly.
And I'm sure that we would be much more able to respond to your question. And,
yep. Yeah, definitely. Actually, I'm sorry for asking this at this meeting.
Oh, no.
I just wanted to send it by email, but I was just asking if it's a legitimate question. And okay. Then I will definitely write it and send it to the list.
It's a perfectly legitimate question, and thank you very much for raising it. It goes to a number of points that we will be discussing, but we need to get, I think we need a little bit more information from you before we can even hope to get a sensible answer.
Okay, thank you.
Harry?
Yeah, I mean, there's a more fundamental issue that I suspect addresses the concern that's just been raised, and that is the DNS itself and anything that attaches to the IDNA protocols know absolutely nothing about language. We are talking about script here. The only thing that we operate on ultimately is script, and the Arabic script is used for more languages than Arabic itself. And although I certainly would be surprised myself if there was any contention whatsoever about what an Arabic nation might put forward as its proper name, there are conceivable situations where the way the Arabic script is being represented in the namespace may have implications for non-Arabic languages using that same script. And that's the sort of stuff that has to be considered very carefully before we can proceed. I'm not suggesting that there are any issues. I'm simply calling attention to the fact that there may be issues, and that needs to be examined before we can proceed. So it is not a language issue. It is a unicoding issue, this tired question that keeps getting raised and keeps not getting understood in this context, but has to be, just has to be.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Can I join the queue, Suzanne?
Yeah, you can, Suzanne. One comment from Patrick first, and then over to you.
Patrick? Yeah, Patrick Seltzer. I think, though, Kerry, that at this point in time, we were talking about the selection of the TV stream. We should not mix that up with potential policy for language TV second-level domain.
That's actually not what I'm commenting on. I'm commenting on the possibility of, and we talked about this last time, that there will be characters, Arabic letters, that will appear identically in the ink on paper space, which broach multiple representations in Unicode. And the appropriate way to do this is a pan-language issue. And it attaches, again, to the script. And we don't talk about script here. We talk about language here. And that is what I suspect is the thing that needs further consideration that isn't being accounted for in the present discussion. This has nothing to do with delegation on lower levels in the domain namespace.
Thank you, Carrie. And it's not that point isn't understood. It is understood. You're right that it needs further discussion, and it probably needs a level of understanding to be reached by those of us that are non-technical.
Excuse me. May I also post something to the list regarding this issue which has just been raised?
Yes, of course. You can post anything to the list at all that you like.
Okay.
Suzanne, you're next.
Yes, thank you, Chris, and thank you, Terry. I guess I have more of a question because I may be one of those in the possibly a minority, and I'm just happy to admit it, that does not understand the premise or the rationale for the language committee. So Terry's intervention was very helpful, thank you, because it seemed to be more from a technical perspective, that there needs to be some kind of a technical review to check the script from a Unicode perspective. And maybe what it requires is a write-up, because clearly this issue is proving to be very sensitive, I think as many of you have noted, when it comes to from a sovereign government entity perspective. And certainly when we look at what the Syrian intervention of a few minutes ago, the tremendous amount of work that has already been undertaken by language experts that have been identified by their respective governments, whether that would be undone or somehow reviewed by some other committee of language experts. So I think the more we can understand what the motivation is, what the premise is, I think the easier it will be to tackle this. Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. I just want to address a couple of points that you made because I think you might be mixing two things together. Carrie's, if I understand correctly, Carrie's point, which is the point that was raised previously, and I think it was the meeting before by Ram and various others, it's nothing specifically to do with a language committee or not having a language committee. It's to do with whether or not your IDN CCTLD is going to be language-based, sheeting back to a language table, or script-based, going back to a script table, because if you look at Arabic script, just in my very simplistic understanding, and I may have missed a few in here, but Urdu uses Arabic script, Farsi uses Arabic script, and Arabic uses Arabic script, and the three different languages have a vast number of characters in common, but a number of characters that are not in common. If Saudi Arabia lodges the Saudi Arabian Arabic language table in the IANA repository and applies for .Saudi using that language table, that is fine for Saudi Arabia because they're using the Arabic language table. What Carrie is suggesting is that you shouldn't do that. What you should actually do is wait until territories and language communities that share a particular script have reached an agreement on a script table that crosses all of the languages that use that particular script, and that until you have done that, you should not issue, delegate any IDN CCTLDs, or presumably any GTLDs, in that particular script. But that in itself has got nothing whatsoever to do with whether there should be a language committee or not. The two things I think are separate discussions. In Dubai, when we had a meeting, the message that I got from Dubai, and this was only the message I got, was that the territories represented were very happy to be working closely with each other to come up with a pan-Arabic language script table, but did not want to wait for that to happen. And wanted, in respect to the delegation of their IDN CCTLD, which they were perfectly happy to do on the basis of a language table. So, Suzanne, does that make sense to you?
It helps a bit, thank you.
Carrie, did I describe that sort of reasonably okay?
Actually, you're reading a little bit more into it than I had intended. I don't see anything that I'm talking about being cause for delay. I'm just calling attention to one of the central issues, this whole business about what do we need coordination for. The Arabic-speaking countries certainly are capable of saying what their names are and what their labels ought to be. But I'm suggesting that there is cross-language boundary, and there can be issues across language boundaries when addressing the shared script that do need to be considered. I'm not suggesting that this is a thorny or intricate issue. I'm just calling attention to the fact that it does have to be considered.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you for that.
This is Edmund.
Yes, Edmund.
Can I be on the queue?
What did you want specifically? Which point do you want to address?
Actually, I need to drop off in a couple of minutes. I just want to, say a couple of things before I need to drop off.
Oh, you need to go. Okay, no problem. Fire away then.
Sure. Okay, thanks. Well, I think I just want to make sure that, people on the call and on the record to know that, as myself coming from GNSO side, it seems to me that it's often talked about as being trying to delay this whole thing. And I really don't think this is the right characterization. In fact, myself, and I think a lot of people from GNSO we are very interested to make sure that the fast track works, and we put in place a mechanism that works well. And the disagreement that we have earlier on is really on which is fast. In my point of view, and I think a number of GNSO colleagues would agree, changing the scope of the IDNC work group and forcing the board to take on undue responsibilities is not actually the fastest way to go through this fast track. myself from .Asia, having worked with, you know, 20 plus CCTLDs, I understand, and especially from Asia, we understand the urgency, and we understand, you know, we want to get this, you know, make this work, and, you know, the sovereignty issue and all the GATT principles, we're very aware of, and we really want to make sure that this whole thing works. So I just want to, you know, make the statement in a sense that, at least myself, and I believe a lot from the GNSO, you know, is in agreement that we want to find a way that works, but some elements, not all, not the whole proposed methodology, but some elements of the proposed methodology may actually turn out not to be the path of least resistance, but rather, you know, make it not as fast as we want it to be, and that's the reason why we're raising these issues.
Thank you, Edmund. Can we move, unless there's anyone else that has any general comments, I'd like to move on to, having gone through the principles, move on to the actual model itself. See, I think we've got areas of agreement in respect to this, and there are maybe only a couple of areas on which we don't agree. So if everyone's all right to do that. Okay. So the first stage one is called preparing for the fast track in the territory. And what we said here is that the language must be official. And then we've defined official. The way that we've defined official say that the language is one that has a legal status in the territory or that serves as a language of administration. And so for the purposes of the fast track, a language could be demonstrated to be official if it's listed on as an ISO 639 language in the list referred to, or it's listed as administrative language, or it's demonstrated or evidenced the language is used in official communications by the relevant public authority, which I think is Ravi's point, in the territory and serves as a language of administration. And the reason for those three definitions is very simple. Basically, there are a lot of countries where the language is simply not one. Sweden being the classic example that everybody always uses because Swedish is not an official language in Sweden. And as far as I'm aware, there are no official languages in the UK or various other countries. So you can, your government or your public authority can effectively send a letter for the delegation saying, Wingding is an official language of the territory, and that's fine. Now, this seems to me to have been relatively non-contentious. In that, as far as I'm aware, no one has really objected to this at all, and everyone seems to be quite comfortable with it. So, does anyone actually on this call or in this room have a problem with this particular part of the methodology? Well, it has to be included in the Unicode table, otherwise it won't. That's an IDNA protocol requirement, and one of the overarching principles is that you have to the IDNA protocol.
Official language in the country means how my community supports that language uses in the administration.
No, it simply says, if it's on the list, it's on the list, right? So that's obviously not a problem. But if it's not on the list, then it's for the relevant public authority in the territory to say in the process that this is an administrative language. So in the case of India, you would say that the 22 languages are constitutionally, whatever, official languages.
I have absolutely no objection to it, but does it mean that everyone gets to claim every language they wish to claim?
There really is no limit on it. I don't object to there being no limit on it, but there is no limit on it.
I suppose, technically speaking, yes, if Australia wanted to, if the Australian government...
Don't even have to talk about Australia. Look at U.S. and California, where, you know, every language just about is official.
I guess the answer is yes. I mean, one would hope.
All languages.
One would hope. Yeah, but one would hope that would not be the case.
And no one will ever abuse.
That one would hope because we are dealing with government here. And government would never ever abuse any process.
That would never happen.
But it seems to me that this in itself is not a controversial particular aspect of it. And, you know, the reason why we've put the definition the way we have is to allow for the political situation. So,
that's not good. You should turn it off. It's not good. No.
Just turn it off.
Yeah.
Hey, sorry, we're just having a bit of a problem here. We won't be long.
Turn it off.
Okay. Sorry about that, everybody. Hello, Heather. Okay. Okay, are we... Right. Sorry about that. So, in that case, we can then move on to the next bit, which is, again, I don't think there's actually any pushback on. Which is that the language, you must have a language table, and the language table needs to exist, obviously, and it needs to be prepared in accordance with the IDN guidelines, otherwise not going to work. So again, I think that's fairly easy and everyone can deal with that. The third aspect is that you obviously need to know what string it is you want, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. The fourth is that you have a ccTLD registry organized. Now, there has been a little bit of comment from one or two people suggesting that you shouldn't have to be ready, and you shouldn't. You don't necessarily have to have a ccTLD registry organised. You should just basically be able to apply for a string, and then presumably keep it in cold storage for the next 5 years or whatever. But I think the general consensus view of this working group has been that it's fast tracked, and therefore by definition, if you want to be fast tracked, you want to use it. It's not just about getting it, but you want to be able to use it. Anybody want to comment on that?
I'd like to make a comment on
that. Yes, Tom.
I think the fast track has a practical objective and a political objective. I can very well imagine that there are a certain number of actors who would be willing to display the fact that they are moving forward, and it's fair. And in terms of announcement, in certain cases, it might be very good for everybody that people could say, actually, this is the thing that we will apply for. Now we're getting into the process of setting up the CCPL manager and this and that.
Yeah.
And it's just a point in connection to what was said about what can be achieved in Paris. I do believe that there should be some opening and capacity for actors to basically focus. It allows to make political and PR announcements to be very straightforward, and the implementation goes forward as
well. Well, there's nothing to stop you, presumably, from saying we've decided that our IDN ccTLD string is going to be, in Hindi or whatever, it's going to be this. You can say that as many times as you like. But what we're saying is that we're not going to kick this process off, which involves, at the very least, involves the time of a technical committee to check that the Unicode thing works, and then involves Diana going through a whole thing. I mean, Diana can't go through its process without the ccTLD manager anyway, because
as far as delegation is concerned,
so the
not as far as identification of the.
But if you're saying that it ought to be possible for you to identify the string and have that string, and what? Just say this is the string we want.
And agreed to, that there is no objection, that it is non-controversial.
But it might be non-controversial today and then controversial in 2 years' time when you actually want to delegate. Might it not?
I don't know. I guess.
Where is my screen battery here? Yeah. I'm sorry, I thought you were saying something.
Another issue of what you're suggesting raises another issue. That means say if you go back in the history just for ccTLDs, you could see that some territories went through a process of 4 years, 4 to 5 years before they requested the delegation.
Yeah.
Now, even if you have, say, we know the IBM CCPDP would take 3 or 4 years, maybe 3 to 4 years. I think what you want to avoid is that somebody applying under the fast track will come on, that they will apply at the same time when the CCPDP has done its work. Because then you have two conflicting rules, and you don't want to have two processes in place for an IBM CCTLD. Because that is the risk you're running if you follow your process.
No, this is exactly why I've been pushing from the last few months for the notion of a fast lane in a single process rather than a separate fast track.
But then that assumes that either the PDP is leading or that the fast track will, and we don't have that guarantee, that the fast track will it's a streamlined version of the PDP. So it determines the outcome of the PDP.
I thought, if I understood correctly, that the PDP, once it was decided, basically trumped anything that was happening in the fast track. So basically, for those people, it would just be, you better get it done before the PDP is signed, because the rules change on you.
Yeah.
And
that's why I'm saying that. Hopefully the rules are not going to change. You know, the whole point about building the fast track is that it doesn't happen. But can I ask that I understand the point, and I think that what we've done is this one particular point about identifying the CCTLD manager, etc., selecting the registry. It's come together from a whole series of different reasons. We started off by saying, it was pretty clear from the first public meeting that we held in whenever it was at ICANN that the community was saying you need to let the criteria set the basis of the numbers. You shouldn't say there's only going to be 10 or there's only going to be 15 or whatever, or India can only have 2. You shouldn't say that. What you should say is set the criteria to allow the numbers, and remember that it's a fast-track process, and remember that it's supposed to be satisfying a pressing need. If it's satisfying a pressing need, and it's a fast-track process, and the criteria are going to set the number, one of the things that you surely need to say is you've got to be ready, because if you're not ready, then there's no purpose in being there.
That depends on how you define the pressing need. I think a lot of actors do have a pressing need of displaying political movement.
But that's not what this process is about. That's a political argument, and one which I'm sure is that you and I could spend many a happy hour over the last one discussing. But this is not, if we're going to get caught up in that with this, we're never going to go anywhere.
May Carrie ask a question, please?
Of course you may, Carrie.
Thank you. I wonder simply, if the contours of the fast track are sort of defining themselves as need arises, what's going to prevent us from ending up in a situation where pretty much everybody who wants to go goes via the fast track, and there's no need even to discuss the PDP subsequently? That's sort of the grandest preempting of that there could possibly be, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. And one of the we struggled with this at the very beginning, because if you're going to, that's why we have to have the highest barriers we can to entry, to ensure that the policy development process itself is not preempted, and you set, and as I said again, you set the criteria to try and achieve a circumstance where you do satisfy the president. Can I take India as an example, Cody? I assume that you were not going to be ready for 22 languages tomorrow. I assume that you would be ready for, say, 2 or 3, but that given that it's an ongoing process, you will work over a period of time to get ready for the other ones. And then, assuming that the fast track is still running, you would then apply for those to be delegated under the fast track. Is that basically correct?
Your perception is right.
Okay. Yes, Avery.
How and who determines if somebody is ready?
If you're ready.
And somebody challenge somebody else.
Well, that's the IANA process.
Okay, so IANA can say so-and-so is not ready.
Well, IANA does right now in delegation. So the whole principle of the actual delegation itself is to use the existing IANA process, possibly tweak a bit
That's the back end process and all of
that. That's the back end process.
So people can enter the fast track saying, we're ready. And it's only at the end of the process that
correct.
Someone says, oh, no, you weren't.
Yes and no.
It's yours.
It is. If you look at the stages, that's why it's structured the way it is. It is, you will not enter the IAMA processes or whatever unless you fulfill all these four criteria. Because at the end of the day, there is another issue. At the end of the day, IAMA has to deal with one point of contact, which should be, I think, and if you look at delegation processes, it is the intended ID or the CCTOD operator. That is ICANN's point of contact. So even if you want to, if you go down that path, at the end of the day, it's the proposed IBM CCTLD operator who will be the point of contact with IAM and with ICANN. Otherwise, it won't work. You end up in a whole confusion of communication going to different parties, and then one thing is ensure the fast track won't work.
Isn't there a bias here in favor of the CCTLD
manager? No,
not at all. If India wants to, we've said right from the very start of this that we start under no circumstances. Is it true that an existing CCTLD manager is more likely? To be capable, then yes, of course that's true, but that's the fact of life, you can't, nothing you can do about that. But there's nothing to stop, and it's perfectly logical that India, again, I'll use them as an example, because a lot of the languages are regional. So clearly they might want to have a CCTLD operator actually running a particular IDM CCTLD in the region that the language is spoken in. It makes perfect sense. Now whether that's going to slow them down slightly, because they need to get a new CCTLD manager ready, is an in-territory issue.
Yeah, maybe need to stress that again. It is whether or not it is the current CCTLD operator, that is a matter of the territory itself.
I know, but what I mean is the criteria, I'm sorry if I misunderstand, but I can imagine that the case of India in particular, in terms of the political announcement, saying we have one or two strings and the other ones we'll do later, is simply different from saying, this is a range of strings that we will apply for, and we will implement it progressively because we have to set it up.
When the process isn't happening.
The process today prevents that.
No, it does not. You can make an announcement today.
Because they wouldn't be ready for the other one.
Yeah, but hang on a second.
That's an internal issue.
They can make the announcement and say, we decided these are our strings. What's the problem with that? What are you actually asking to have happen? You're asking the process to tick the string.
Yes. Before dealing with the delegation. These are two different issues.
We've just had a whole discussion at the last two meetings. We've had this amazing discussion about how no one can tell the territory that they can't have the string. Now you're asking me to tick the string. I can't have it both ways. Either the string itself is a choice, it's subject to the criteria, is the choice of the territory, or someone takes the string. It's one or the other. So if India decides what they want, subject to the technical test, etc.
Let's see what the problem is.
Does somebody, Giannis, is that you?
I'm not clear what it is that you seem to be
advocating a separate process.
No.
The notion that there is a single process altogether, but it goes in small steps like a simple chase. There is one track, and you can hop the first barrier by saying these are the strings we propose. What I understood from the group that has been formed in the Arab League is that they have established this discussion among themselves on the strings. Now you get another problem with the table, the language table, and then you get the delegation process and so on. What I'm just advocating is that I think, but I may be proved completely wrong, and if there's no consensus on that, I agree. But I believe is that political basis for every actor, for ICANN,
for the government and for everybody to have relatively rapidly some sort of simple announcement whereby each government either completely autonomously or with some kind of protection process, whatever, says these are the strengths, and the community, one way or the other, says, okay, these are the strengths, you can make an announcement. And ICANN can make an announcement saying, we've moved forward, these are the strengths that will work.
What happens if the government changes in a year's time and they decide they want something else? ICANN is actually set in stone. I don't see how you can create a fast-track approach that is a kind of sort of fast-tracking bit. So you're going to fast-track the choice of the string and then you can fast-track something else. This is supposed to be a streamlined approach that is allowed for these IDM CCTLDs to be delegated. Not to be identified, but to be delegated. They can be identified right now. Presumably, Ravi, you could tell us right now what the 22 or most of the 22 strings are.
As Bernard has been mentioning, the overall policy of trying to say that an inclusive factor of bringing languages on board is what I can per se is going ahead on the basis of nations which have been articulating for various languages.
Correct.
As a principle, it is taken as granted. Two, the operating factors thereof. ICANN is putting into place a mechanism of the string and also the fact of a fast track process. In order to do that, a limited number is the best way to go ahead to actually test it out and to see how it is efficacious and effective. For that, in dialogue with the representatives on the territory readiness and needs, the limit to which we are doing so on a first-hand basis. I suppose we can say for 22 languages of India, I'm just making a statement. If I were to take a rigid stand that 22 languages or not, I think that would be a very different sort of a situation. But if I did say, yes, it's ready to start with 4, and we should go ahead and see this thing, and then we will
you guys have to hand me here.
On for subsequent language development.
You just have to give them to Mrs. Hebert. Can you give them all to Mrs. Hebert, Brent, Rachel?
Okay. That kind of makes sense. So, can we... Oh, I'm just going to turn off the noise on my phone.
I have one more question.
Yes,
okay. The IANA delegation process, is IANA going to check the interscript variations prior to delegation? Interscript, whether any script has to be delegated to that country, any language string on that country, whether that backend, all the scripts and variations in across the world languages is going to come, is going to be checked by that?
No. The current The current intention, I'll start that again. The way we have been discussing it has been that you would lodge your own language table for Urdu or Hindi with the IANA repository. If there was already a Hindi language table lodged that you were comfortable with, then you would be able to use that, but that language table is yours for your would be yours for your IDM CCTLD. Now, if there's another territory that speaks Hindi, then they presumably would be able to use the same language table, but they don't have to use the same language table to you, as I understand it. I think there's a Polish language table for one particular script language and another version of the same language in another table, I think. But does that answer your... So all IANA's going to be doing is doing what IANA always does, which is the delegation stuff. Are you technically capable under the current proposal? And that's all they really can do. That's what they're trained to do. That's what they do.
No, my question is that particular script or language has some variant existing with some other language which is also going to be dedicated.
Again,
okay. A particular string of a particular country is given to the table to IANA for dedication. But suppose there is one language here, one language somewhere in another country.
Yeah.
But there are some script variation in that particular string. Is that going to be, IANA is going to take care of?
You mean if two countries want to use different language tables for the same language?
Common English.
Okay, so the script is common, but not language.
Script is basically a symbol.
Yeah, I know.
It is all a derivation. Now, the language scripts would have evolved over time, and the symbolic representation, two different languages could have far located, let's say, far off from one another.
So
but the representation...
Two languages can even use two different subsets of the same script,
So, it is just by, let's say, an accident that... a language group from the Indic languages and a language group from the Latin languages. Suppose that the symbolic representation in Hindi is one and let's say in Latin is another. And we will have to draw the variance. That's what is right. We have encountered this particular passage in two Indian languages which use different scripts.
Okay.
But the symbol of representation are varying in... We have tried to resolve it through the variant table to see that there is no sort of confusion on that. We have developed our own
variant table.
Okay, we have stated so far because I still don't understand the question.
Okay, we're going to take that offline. I don't understand it either, but
that's
the question.
Sure, that would be two different languages, two different scripts. In that case, they are completely disjoint. But what you're talking about is that you want to have a variant language table which
catches
across two different scripts, two different completely disjoint sets of code points. Okay.
So we can talk about that.
And there is one element to that discussion. So if you look at the current rules for the submitting language table to IANA, one of the things that is very clearly said, IANA doesn't do any check on the language table.
That's right.
So if there is this working group wants to do it, this whole set of rules needs to change, and that will take implementation time.
Yeah. So the whole idea of what I have heard so far about language table is that it's up to every party that submits a request for TLD that chooses a language table in the repository that they want to use. That language table is either, of course, a new one that they create, or it is language table that someone else has been using. But it's still completely up to them, and there is no verification at all.
Does anyone on the phone have anything they need to say at this point? Is anyone left on the phone, actually, at this point?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Yanis. I knew I could rely on you. In that case, I'm going to move on to the next area, which is the area, of course, where we have the most disagreement. I don't think that there's any disagreement about the string being checked by the technical committee. I think everyone accepts that. And my understanding is that the way that would need to work is that if the XM dash dash string needs to be delivered to the technical committee along with what the language is and which language table it is referring to, and basically, if I understand it correctly, Patrick, you would then be in a position to, not you personally, but the technical committee would be in a position to check the string.
But the code points are okay, that they fulfill, that they actually pass all the technical requirements set up in the standard, etc.
Yeah. So the the area that's causes the most difficulty then is goes to that, but to criteria, an official language by our definition, and meaningful by our definition. And Bart and I sent a note out to the list on the weekend, on Friday, which basically sets out, as far as we can see, the only two alternatives that there are, which is that you either, assuming that you accept the principle of having a criteria in the first place, we've kind of dealt with because we've discussed that and agreed, certainly those on this call anyway, agreed that there's consensus around those criteria, then there's only two ways to go. One way to go is that you have a check on that by a language committee of linguistic experts, and the other way to go is that you say the territory puts in the delegation request and says in the delegation request, this is the string which meets the criteria, and effectively that's it. It meets the criteria because they've said so, and therefore it goes forward. So my question, and I think I've kind of outlined it in the document that we sent out on Friday, is if you go that second road, then does that mean that IANA and ultimately the board do not even concern themselves with it at all? Or does it mean that in the same way that they currently look to ensure, for example, that the local internet, that there is support of the local internet community in respect to the delegation, that they would in the same way look to ensure to see that the, for evidence of this string actually being meaningful in the terms of our definition? So would we expect the territory to actually, in its delegation request, the territory has to say, you know, the government supports, the CCTLD manager does this, the local internet community is on side, etc. Presumably you'd also expect it to say, by the way, the string meets the criteria, and here's why the string meets the criteria, because it's an official language, here's the letter that says it's the language of administrative use, and it is the, you know, it denotes the territory. But the question is, if you go down that road, is that it? Or does IANA and / the board end up having the right to say, well, actually, we don't think it does? So that's really where I think we are with it, and I'd be interested to hear what other people think.
That was a very long question for you guys for 25 this afternoon, I tell you.
All written down.
Yeah.
That's the core of the debate for the last 2 weeks, or the last two conference calls.
Yeah.
And now this time people don't have anything to say, but...
just have to move on. And if you don't... we can change this to simply be...
Yes, Janet.
Yes, Janet.
I think... So first of all, thank you for this note. It is very useful, and it explains much in more detail what we're talking about. I think, in my view, the IDN thing will not be a blind date. And if IANA people, whoever we will be dealing, and boards, will not understand what they are approving, they would not give approval. So whether there will be a language committee or not in the recommendation, they would ask people who handle languages anyway, because they would need to know for sure that what is written means exactly what they were told. it will verify, just for their own protection, for their own sake, whatever is proposed anyway. So the value or the advantage of this language committee is that they would work with applicants already during the process. And if for one reason or another IANA people or board will not be happy with proposed strings, they would turn it down or would postpone, and that would put applicants in a difficult position. So I think we need to understand that the language committee is help for everybody. It's for applicants, it's for the board or them. And maybe people also think that committee is something big. Maybe one, two people who are well known and recognized in the area. So, and I am personally convinced that there is a need for that committee, and or need for experts, could be also called, as one has suggested, expert pool. But IANA board, is also applicants, need to have somebody who would give their blessing and would act as a consultant. And that's why myself, I'm very much in favor of that.
Thank you, Janet. Does anybody else want to say anything at this point in respect to that particular issue? Okay. Yes, sorry, Ravi.
Responding to the general trend of discussion, I would like to say that in delegation lies the effectiveness of achieving stated objectives, or while I can itself rely on outsourcing mechanism or taking the expert onto the board to get their assistance. The whole concept of trying to get language experts and determining strength calls for a certain degree of delegation based on generally accepted principles that the public authority of the country or the accredited authority by the government is given that particular task. Once we are able to take a decision accordingly in ICANN or IANA, I suppose that becomes the most efficient way of working. On the country experience, I would like to see, we ourselves within India have got a body which is working on languages. We have an authority under the Department of Information Technology called the Center for Development of Advanced Computing, which not only works in the area of high computing, but also works in the area of language conversion and technology development in Indian languages, which therefore becomes a very important public authority which can be delegated this particular aspect of IANA or ICANN. I thought I would share this perspective so that it enables this body to take decisions subsequently.
Thank you. I just want to make two points about this. The first is that, a logistical point, which is that my sense of it is that the CCPLD side of the working group has generally got consensus that they would be comfortable with a check, if you like, on the stream. By some sort of whereas from the government side of the working group, there is pushback and concern about at least the perception of abandoning sovereignty or being seen to abandon sovereignty. I'm also aware that there is a GAC call on the 20th of May specifically to discuss the IDN issue. So I think that probably it might be sensible for us to not continue the discussion about this right now and let the GAC have its cool on the 20th of May and see what comes out of that. But I would like to say just one thing, that is for you to consider, that is this. If the principle of a language committee as an independent committee as it's currently set out in the document is just not going to fly, that's fine. But you do need to address a mechanism that, so Rudy, for example, you suggested that maybe you could have, I'm interpreting your suggestion, maybe you could have a circumstance where the territory provided a report as part of the delegation process, a report from a linguistic expert in the territory that says that the criteria are understood and that these criteria are met. That sort of, if the committee scenario isn't going to work, then something in the process that actually allows for more than just the government turning up saying this is the thing, you know, Scott Ravi in Hindi is what we want for India, okay? I'm sure that wouldn't happen. So if we can do it, if that's where you get to, it would be useful to get some things back from the gang. I mean, deal with some sort of check while making it an internal check rather than a...
I'd like to, with your permission, add something, since the whole question is evolving on public policy. Only last week I had the opportunity to be present before parliamentary forum, and in the parliamentary forum is meeting in Geneva. They have expressed their deep desire to see that countries across the world, their parliamentary forums also try to look at the aspect of diversity and access from an IDF perspective. On the question of how we administrators were progressing ahead with including the internet inclusion in Indian languages, we did apprise our own parliamentary standing committee of the going on within the GAC, ICANN and other certainties. We did emphasize it on the anvil. I thought this becomes an important articulation point, as Bernard also was emphasizing how is the political thought process going. I just thought it adds to the flavor of it all.
Anyone else on that point? Okay.
Hi, Yellen here?
Yes, Yellen.
I would just like to confirm that Chris's interpretation of the BCNSF position is appropriate.
The only other point I'd also like GAC to consider is what fiduciary duty has, and that they do need to be whatever happened before. In the sense that up until now, CCTLDs have been pre-designated by someone else. You do need to take into account that they are, if you want to ask them to make a simple decision based on company and territory, then there are certain consequences that flow from that. Which brings us rather neatly, everyone doesn't have any junction left, keep going for a little while longer, brings us to the Dolly old objection procedure.
Is that the objection? I must say the logic for the objection procedure is the logic from the linguistic. And it seems very similar. When I hear the structure and form of the argument, they're incredibly similar. That something's going to have to happen anyway, and therefore we need some mechanism to do it.
I'm sorry, I've not
been deeply involved in the discussion. Say something that's completely over the top or naive and just ignore it. The linguistic concept to me actually has some similarities to prior things that ICANN has done, where it's trying not to take on a role or responsibility in what is or is not a language or a script, if one might want to say it that way. I think it provides a very good safety valve from a standpoint of if somebody puts forward a proposal of what is going to be in India the right language to use, the script or however you want to term this, that's fantastic. But what if you have a situation where it's not been thought through as carefully? What is the mechanism to ensure that ICANN itself does not end up saying, gee, that doesn't quite look right because, I don't know, Teresa reads German and see that umlaut's in the wrong place. That's what we're trying to prevent. It's not to endorse what is decided at a national or local level, but rather to ensure that the organization itself doesn't become a linguistic expert, because God knows it shouldn't be going that direction. So I think maybe we need to look at that linguistic group from that standpoint as well. I just throw that on the table because I keep hearing this debate about viewing it as a problem as opposed to potentially a very good backup and safety valve for situations where there may not have been a thorough thinking through and expertise involved in what's being submitted. And we do need to take precautions for that space.
Okay.
So that, I just throw that on the table as a way to think about this.
I think that is there in this proposition that FASTAG is an experimental in nature. So that you get into a some thing which is objectionable later on, pull back or something like that. Is,
yeah.
It, is this in the correct meaning?
Look, you could suggest that it's been said many times that, you know, there would need to be some kind of document that says, yes, we acknowledge it's experimental and it may go wrong and today, et cetera. But fundamentally, the political consequences of delegating an IDM CCTLD, if it goes wrong on the first day, it's obviously no disaster, fine, no problem, pull it back. But the political consequences of 3 years down the track suddenly deciding that you've been running the CCTLD for 3 years, but oops, sorry, it's not going to fly. I mean, there's no way that's going to happen. Your point about the language committee and the objection process, I agree with you to an extent. The distinction I would make is that if you the principle of the purpose of the language committee is to the intention of the language committee was to check to ensure that the string did indeed meet the criteria. The problem with an objection process is that even if that would be after that, and what you have in a circumstance where you've got a territory that's put forward a string, it meets the criteria by whatever test you decide to put in place to say it meets those criteria, so the language committee or an internal linguistic expert or whatever, and then you have an objection from new star level or affiliate or whoever saying we have a problem with this, or you have an objection from another government. Now, your point about there will be objections anyway is quite true. It's entirely feasible that you'll get to the point where it's the meeting in the ICANN meeting in wherever in June 2009, and two IDM CCTLD delegations are being dealt with, and there are letters of protest from possibly even other governments. That's not the same thing as saying this is a fast-track approach, it must be non-contentious, therefore if there's an objection, it stops. Which is effectively what Edmund's point has been, that the fact that there is an objection means that therefore it's therefore contentious and therefore it stops. There's a massive difference between building a process that allows that to happen on the one hand, and on the other hand, allowing for the venting of political upset. Simply by, of course you can write to the board and say it's absolutely outrageous that Macedonia. So I do think there's a difference.
Put it another way, say, if you look at it, say, if you have this linguistic committee or whatever, so you assume this string meets the criteria, so it is meaningful representation, then what is the ground for objection?
As I've always understood, the ground for objection is that have all the criteria indeed been met? In other words, you're going to have a large box of criteria.
Yeah.
Some of them linguistic, some of them technical, some of them combinatorial, some of them, in some cases, perhaps fairly complex. And what you're basically saying is it's up to the territory, it's up to ICANN staff, and at the end of the day, it's up to the board. What I've been basically arguing is that you need to have an open method for sort of somebody raising a flag and saying, you know, you've published a set of criteria, but I don't think you meant that one. And basically, having some way of saying, indeed, the criteria have been met. So I think it's slightly different than, and I think it's almost a straw man argument, that because somebody comes up with any objection out of the blue, that makes it contentious, therefore it's blocked. I don't think what anyone's saying that. I think what is being said is that there are a number of sets of criteria, and some of them may be a down on paper, some of them may be complex and combinatorial, and that's where the IP or whatever can come up, where someone does get a flag and that there is a process, is that the raising of the flag doesn't stop it because it's contentious. The raising of the flag says, okay, we've got something to check here to see whether there is contention or not.
And Avery, that's what that actually means. You are asking, what that means you are asking is you are asking governments to agree to submit a delegation request for a CCTLD to an open objection process, and I just can't conceive of how that would be possible.
I tried to bridge since
I'm not a governor.
I think you're heading in the same direction. If I understand well what Avery's saying, correct me if I'm wrong. What Avery's saying is that as there might be objections, there is a need to have a mechanism that can overrule the objections in order to avoid that raising an objection derails the process by definition.
The mere acknowledgement that someone can object is the challenge, I would have thought, from a government point of view, that merely for the members of the GAC to agree a process that contemplates the possibility that another government could object. I mean, the mere fact of another government objecting is impossible to deal with. So to take then another step and say, oh, look, you know, the CCTLD manager of Turkmenistan is objecting, or another registrar is objecting.
Or maybe, Avery, put it in another way, if I understand you correctly, what you say, the way you explain the objection procedure is that you want to have a mechanism in place for a kind of due diligence check of the process itself.
That due diligence, at the end of the day, falls on the community to sort of say, wait a second, I think you missed due diligence here. And perhaps I'm coming out of having gone through the whole GNSO procedure, where at every step we sort of open it up and say, hey, anybody, did we mess up? No, okay, we didn't mess up. Okay, we can go to the next step. And it's sort of saying the same thing is, you've set a box of criteria. At the end of the day, you will have a set of criteria for fast tracking.
Yeah.
And leaving it only the board, and the board dealing with any of the questions, is the thing that I find problematic.
No, hold on, yes, I agree. The GNSO process that you describe is what you go through in territory. So to get you to the five that time, that's sort of right from a gap. You go through that in territory that gets you to the point. Can't come to IANA and say, we have a peer delegation process, here's the government endorsement, here's the CCTLD manager, here's the local inspection involvement. And in fact, I was talking about this morning, the last, it may not have been the last one, but one of the very recent redelegations that the board approved was the United Arab Emirates redelegation from a TIFLAC to AUDA. And a shameless copy of AUDA. And they sent it back the first time. IANA sent it back and said, you have not got enough evidence of local internet community involvement. And we won't put it to the board until you actually provide us with enough evidence. To which the response was, okay, we say go be gutted. But they did actually do some work and they included some more information about, you know, local community involvement and so on and so forth. So that is the way that once you get to that point, what the sovereign governments say is, that's it now, we've done it. And once we've done that, then sure, you can check to make sure we've met the standard, whatever the standard may be. That's your due diligence. But IANA is basically going to be saying it's a delegation process, which is why I asked the GAC to consider putting into the principle of this, which is not going to work, at least supporting mechanisms that allow for the delegation request to evidence that the criteria have been met. It strikes me as being reasonable. But I just can't see, Avery, how we would ever get agreement from government.
Chris Dennis here. May I ask? Again, the same question that I raised earlier. Could you ever give an example which would explain your concern apart from openness of the process? Is there any specific concern what you are trying to cover by asking this objection process? As Chris said, and I fully share that view, it is close to unimaginable to make this proposal swallow by the gas. Governments are not interfering in delegation, re-delegation. They simply don't want to know when it comes to delegation of other countries. So GATT never discusses that, and really I hardly imagine that we would now say, look, everything which relates to my country's ID and CCPLD now is for public comment. I mean, inside the country, there will be a number of countries which will organize this public discussion about maybe string or delegation or policies related to that, no doubt about it, but to give for outside scrutiny, somehow I'm really doubtful. But again, if you could explain what is the concern on very practical terms. For instance, you are concerned that Komori will ask .com and something, or what is the real concern behind your request?
First of all, I always love to try and argue by counterexample, because one can always make one up and one can always shoot one down. So, first of all, I think that the transparency and openness and nature of ICANN is a very valid reason for considering something. But second, I don't want to take Kumari because I don't want to be put in a position of accusing anybody of trying to do anything. But if I could imagine a state, again, a counterexample, purely fantasy, that was very centralized and controlled all, and use your affiliate example, controlled all information within a country, had its own language and script, and decided that .info was really, in their own script, was really an appropriate IBM CCPLD. And they are centralized country, so of course the people do agree with it. The CCPLD within the country has been licensed with them, so of course they. Now, I know there's no country like this, it's purely fantasy, counterexample. So at that point, you've got a territory that has, using the S word notion, has done everything correctly. You've left IANA as the only bulwark against this for IANA to say, we don't think that you were sufficiently inclusive of your internet community because, well, everybody does what they're told. So, and I admit it's a fantasy, but it is the kind of notion that if no one can raise a flag and if there is no external, internal, however, format for judging the justice of such a issue, then you always leave it on IANA and on the board to deal with it. So you always leave sort of ICANN in a vulnerable position, and you leave the board in the most controversial, untenable position. And that, as I say, a fantasy example. But I do believe that the transparency of process is sufficient argument in and of itself.
Hi. Hello. This is Tom. I have something to say. Okay, thanks. If there is really going to be an objection procedure, I guess it's much more complicated than the scenario that a sovereign government is going to object an application from another CCTLD territory. There are many other stakeholders in a CCPLD territory. My question is, this means a user community in one CCPLD territory can also raise an objection against an IDM CCPLD application from another CCPLD territory. And think about the business community can also raise objection. So there's no limitation that the objection can only be raised in one voice and represented by the government in that territory. Right? Just think about the complexity of the whole mechanism. That is. Thanks.
Thank you, Hong.
Chris.
Yes, Janet.
As I said earlier, I don't think that this would fly. But what I think what could fly is kind of explicit mentioning in the recommendations that boards may receive any information from any stakeholder group related to any application and consider according to its own merit or something like that.
Yeah.
So, because again, everybody can raise issue with the board on any issue. Board is obliged to act in a transparent manner. I think that all applications which will be submitted will be known to everybody. So, in reality, there is a possibility to object without having explicit objection mechanism. I mean, anybody can raise issue at any time and send this issue to the board for consideration. And in any case, board is the last resort who takes decision and will be liable to its decision according to bylaw. So, I think that this is the way how we can try to acknowledge this openness and transparency in the process by putting a sentence saying that everybody can raise the issue with the board, but without making any specific objection procedure as a part of the process.
Thank you. Actually, I was listening to what you were saying, and where you ended up is actually it's quite interesting, because in truth, where you ended up saying, so what you have is a situation where it's ultimately left to the board. In fact, in the future.
Musical pause.
Yeah, if you end up, that's exactly what happens in the delegation world, and maybe CCPLD or delegation world, and maybe that's why the CCPLD are more comfortable with it, because actually that's what happens. RFC 1591 effectively ends up pushing it up to the board, and eventually what happens is the board has to make a decision, and they take, there are people objecting. There's back channels open all over the place, and people complaining in corridors. You know, the Western Saharans are there with their signs up saying, we delegate to us, and so on. So that is kind of the way that it's always worked anyway for the CC world. So therefore, maybe that's the reason why we're more comfortable with it.
But the CC world, so in other words, when one of these things is going to happen, it's announced publicly more than just by showing up on the board's agenda for particular. So in other words, it's not like someone says, in a month there is going to be, and if you have comment.
No. Oh, okay.
It's basically if you're watching the board agenda, you'll see
yes.
that next week they're going to
yeah,
talk
but the
about
act, yes, of course, but the actors involved all know that it's going on. So I wasn't suggesting any means. I was just saying that the actual reliance on it ending up being pushed to the board is something that we kind of get. But, I don't think we're going to be able to take this discussion further right now, and we've been going for 2 hours, and I'd like to try and keep it to 2 hours if I could, because I know it's difficult to concentrate.
Maybe we should make the same type of position paper as with the committee.
Or what? Yeah, well,
we're not going to have another call now until after the GAC meeting.
Could I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
What Jan has to say. I think that that kind of process, if there was some method of notification, announcement that such and such was going to happen, and it's not an open comment period because I know an open comment period invites comment. And so it's using the same logic of sort of saying one can comment to the board, one can announce that the board is going to do something in sufficient time for them that want to comment to have a chance, even if you're not explicitly inviting comment.
I must admit that I had assumed that the application to the delegation would be public. I mean, I had assumed that you know, not that it would be some kind of secret thing that went on in the background, but that there would be, you know, the fast track is open today, and the, you know, these are the applications that are being dealt with. I had assumed that.
The notion of applications being announced,
I think I can stop and will be first who will go public with any information related to IDN CCTLD applications. That is a question of the legitimacy of ICANN to improve the legitimacy in the rest of the world. So therefore, I see no difficulty if we in the recommendations we suggest something along the lines that that ICANN board should publish, ICANN should publish information on received applications, but without any specific mentioning of anything else, but just make this information public that country has applied for that string. So that would give sufficient information from those who have some concerns and who want to make sure that their territory is still safe. And after that publication, everybody can do whatever they want in communicating with the board on any given issue.
Okay. Any other final comments before we wrap this up? Okay, so there's a GAC call on the 20th of May. We will organize another IDN working group call soon thereafter. But Gabby will send a note out as soon as possible for a suggested date, which could probably be the usual format, Tuesday or something, some obscure hour of the night in Australia and very early in Los Angeles. Any final comments? Thank you, everybody. It's been very productive so far.
Thank you for attending today's conference call.
Thank you, Fred.